This morning, I watched a YouTube clip of a young lady who sailed from Sweden to New York City to do a presentation at the UN. I can't match that, but I'm glad we have people like that to share the planet with us. What I'll be talking about today is sort of my life experience living at the edge of the woods like we do now. And I'm going to start with my childhood and sort of move forward and talk about my perspective towards conservation and living simply. Nowhere is our landscape changing more rapidly than in our metropolitan areas. My hometown was South Windsor, Connecticut, just outside the moderate-sized capital of Hartford. It was known at that time, in the 1960s, for its tobacco farms. The post-war subdivision where we lived was backed by several miles of untouched woodlands, beyond which there were tobacco fields that extended to the edge of town. So that was where my life experience began, at the edge of those woods. A good portion of my after-school hours and weekends were spent exploring the limits of the forest, following the brooks that fed the Podunk Pond, named after the local Indian tribe, and encountering, sometimes unexpectedly, wildlife. A hollow tree from which a multitude of bats sprang caused quite a start one day. Like Thoreau, I found comfort in the solitude, surrounded by nature. Although most probably that forest had been cleared at least once since European settlement of the region, my false childhood perception was that that area was lasting and permanent. The country, however, added about 47 million people in the first two decades of my life. By my high school years, the farmland and forest had been targeted by developers for residential subdivisions. By the time I returned from college, a subdivision occupied the forest behind our house. Recognizing that consumerism was the principal driver of the modern economy, the developers had also decided that no community should be without abundant retail space. Almost overnight, the Buckland Mall and adjoining retail complexes replaced the tobacco fields. A temporary resurgence in cigar smoking in the late 1980s made some farms regret the loss of the acreage. While I was at UMass working on my master's degree, perhaps in the only time in my life I recall a farm purchasing one of those dead malls, demolishing the buildings, ripping up the asphalt to replant tobacco. With the decline in employment by companies like United Technologies, Connecticut has lost population in recent years, possibly reducing the likelihood that what open space remains in the metropolitan area may be preserved a bit longer. As a geologic hazard geologist, I spend a good deal of time on the perimeter of our metropolitan areas. One of them, which I visit very frequently, is the Nashville area. It's currently experiencing relatively rapid growth, with 7 out of the 10 fastest growing counties in the state in the Nashville metropolitan area. Residential development currently consists of subdivision of large parcels, what once were large rural estates, and new retail, which must be squeezed in nearby to facilitate consumerism that otherwise would be impacted by the traffic congestion that typically goes with increased density, is occurring as well. Surrounded by this ever-changing landscape are the Warner Parks in southwestern Nashville, initially donated by Percy Warner Lee and her husband in 1927 They currently encompass over 3,000 acres of forested hills crossed by the Natchez Trace. Today, these parks are surrounded by dense subdivisions. But a short hike on a dirt or paved trail brings you to a cove of hickory and oaks, a hawk nest, or a headwater spring. Despite the challenge of safely crossing the major thoroughfares that bound the park, particularly on a weekend, to reach the parking areas, once you've stepped into the forest, the solitude embraces you and the quiet sounds of nature begin to register. The most recent annexation includes a bona fide old growth forest, the Hill Forest. It is the largest in an urban area east of the Mississippi, a habitat for migrant neotropical birds. I've never seen one there, but I've been in the forest. Parts of the park, such as the Hill Forest, are limited access, ensuring conservation benefits wildlife and other natural resources. But on a weekend, the number of natural residents I encounter in the park confirm this forest oasis provides opportunity for a deep connection with nature, which in turn supports the strong community support to expand and protect these and similar parks in that metropolitan area. For me, that is like Nashville is the ultimate model of what communities like ours could have in terms of land conservation. Thousands of acres managed like a national park right on our borders. And somehow, that community has recognized what a valuable asset that is to their lives. Now here in Virginia, our family has chosen a life in rural western Loudoun County, or as some people in this congregation refer to it, the frontier. I remember a conversation with a former member of this congregation who once lived out west in Loudoun, and he returned back to this part of the county. And I asked him, well, why would you do that? And his response was, well, there's nothing out there. Our property has about 10 acres of woodland floodplain abutting us. It is part of a continuous forest tributary corridor that extends from Short Hill all the way to the Potomac River. We share this wildland interface with a mating pair of red-shouldered hawks, Virginia's noisy hawk. In addition, there are abundant deer and turkeys, bats at dusk, owls, skunks, possum at night. Foxes and raccoons come unexpectedly and at will. A great blue heron fishes our pond regularly, and crawfish hide under the rocks in our small first-order spring-fed creek. When we first arrived, Paisley and I inventoried the trees on our property and on the floodplain forest. The trees included black walnut, box elder, hackberry, black gum, the native ones. We have mulberries and wineberries, which provide seasonal fruit. We also attempted to enhance our property with native plants. But we faced some setbacks, most recently by invasive species introduced to our region in the pursuit of cheap consumer goods. Most of these things coming over from Asia have overrun my grasslands. Out on the frontier, we choose to live simply. No television, one car, a focus on domestic and wild animals, and relative solitude. When we first arrived there, we knocked on one of our neighbor's doors. She had been there for 5 years and said, "We've never met a neighbor before." As vegetarian, no one is burning down the rainforest in Brazil to feed us. However, living simply has never excluded us from the desperate existence that is the lot of most people. We face a desperate commute almost every day, and it's getting much worse. And what was simple about accommodating the schedule of a daughter in high school and 4-H? I can only count the endless miles that we do in figure eights with our one car to make that happen. Nevertheless, in our small, walled-in type of place, we have found solitude from the hectic pace of modern life. With some help from both our domestic and wild partners, but the landscape is changing all around us, and so much remains to be conserved.